Good morning. I'm State Representative Dave Pinto, and I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. And I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. Members of the public, you can find our meeting materials, including an agenda, on our committee website on the House, Minnesota House website. So go there and check that out. We're going to begin, as we always do, with the taking of the roll. So, Ms. Chambers, please proceed with that.
Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden, excused. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Damon.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Present.
Representative Cotiza-Witun.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Wazlowick.
Present.
And Representative Wolgamott. We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. I think Representative Wolgamott may be presenting a bill in another committee, so would be excused as well. Representative Pryor, if you could please move approval of the March 4th minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections, members, to the March 4th minutes? And hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, the motion passes and our March 4th minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Pryor. So members and members of the public as well, we have a slight change to the agenda. Representative Bolden, you will have heard, is excused because she's presenting a bill in another committee. She has our first bill on the agenda. So we're going to flip bills one and two for now and go with the second bill. And for that, we're welcoming a guest, Representative Bernardi, Chair of the Higher Ed Committee. We're so happy to have you with us, coming to the other end of the educational spectrum here, Representative Bernardi. And if you could please, and actually, I guess I'll need to have Representative Pryor, if you could move that House File 871 be brought before the committee.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Bernardi, welcome, Chair Bernardi, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members. It's so great to be here, and I appreciate you calling out the higher education chair, and I just want to call out all the work that you and the members here do in helping prepare students to be successful when they do graduate and enter their post-secondary education. So it all starts here in your committee and in even earlier. So thank you for all of your work. The bill today modifies the voluntary pre-kindergarten and school readiness plus programs. Both programs provide early education services to children who are at least 4 years old but are not enrolled in kindergarten. Under the current law, the number of funded seats for these programs is set to drop from 7,160 to 3,160 after the fiscal year 2021. This bill will retain those seats, which means 4,000 more preschool kids will be, scholars I should call them, will be able to attend. The state aid cost for this change is estimated to be $39.7 million for fiscal years 2022 and 2023 and $42 million for the next biennium. With the funding, there's a number of people on this committee who are affected by this, that their students would be affected by this. And Representative Bennett and Daniels and Wazlowick and Representative Bolden, Wolgamott, Juergens, and I'm not even sure if Representative Juergens is on this committee, but and there's more. So I am sorry if I didn't name you, but this is affecting 114 sites located in 61 school districts across the state. And as you know, and I won't go into an elaborate research paper, but the success for kindergarten and in helps these kids to be successful in kindergarten and in the life. Intensive high quality pre-kindergarten programs can close much of the opportunity gaps for children of low income of families. And there are lifelong benefits, including increased school achievement and social and economic success as adults. And Reynolds 2000 published that paper. And these goals can be reached through high quality pre-kindergarten programs. And passing this bill will help make that opportunity possible and to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and I believe that you have a testifier, I think a superintendent from your district, Dr. Kim Heil, is that correct?
Yes, I am so happy to introduce Superintendent Dr. Heil. She is our school district, very proud of the work that our school has done and the support that they have gotten through even local levy dollars to make this happen. And I'm going to let her share the wonderful news that just happened to the Fridley School District and just let you know how proud I am. Welcome to the committee, and I'll let the chair take over.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Thank you. And Dr. Heil, welcome to you. We're so glad to have you. And so if you can identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Sure. I am Dr. Kim Heil. I'm the superintendent of Fridley Public Schools. And I'd like to say thank you to you, Chair Pinto, to Vice Chair Representative Pryor, as well to Representative Franson. And thank you, of course, to Representative Bernardi. On behalf of our young scholars and families here in Fridley, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to each one of you today. Fridley has been very fortunate to be a recipient of VPK funding since 2017, with an allotment of 68 seats. We also received additional slots in 2018-19 for a total of 114 seats. And in 2019-20, we received 145 seats. So these VPK seats have provided essential and needed opportunities for many children to attend a preschool that otherwise would have not had that opportunity. Over the past 4 years, 42% of the families have qualified for free and reduced lunch, with 45% qualifying for free and reduced lunch during the 2020-21 school year. Also in the 2021 school year, over 35% of our families had a home language other than English. Additionally, in 2021, our demographics who we were currently serving, 32% were Black, African American, 8% identified as multiple races, 11% Asian, 11% Hispanic, and 37% white students, which aligns closely with our racial demographics here at Fridley Public Schools as a whole. In Fridley Public Schools, our number one focus is to ensure our young scholars are prepared for success in kindergarten. So this year, Fridley Public School has been authorized as an international baccalaureate program, making Fridley Public Schools the only E through 12 continuum IB program in the state of Minnesota. So our scholars are starting their IB journey at the age of 4. Fridley has several parent-aware rated childhood programs. As a school-based program, we are intentional in our outreach to families who enroll in VPK. All families are able to register. However, prioritization is given to students based on need, and we always have a waitlist for pre-K in Fridley. At Fridley Public Schools, we do blend our funding streams to maximize the amount of preschool students that we are able to serve. So currently we use school readiness dollars, special services, and VPK funds to offer 160 total four-year-old preschool slots in a typical year. This year, that number was reduced to 117 due to reduced enrollment because of COVID-19 pandemic. For our three-year-old school readiness program, our 2021 data reflected the following. 40% of our students receive a pathway scholarship. 66% of our students pay either no fee or qualify for a reduced rate on our sliding fee scale. Our demographics for this three-year-old program, 39% are African American Black, 39% are white, 4% Native Indigenous, 14% Asian, and 4% are Hispanics, Latinx. When or if one of these funding streams are removed or reduced, that program has to adjust. And this will reduce our ability to serve our Fridley scholars and our families in our district. The result would be significant in Fridley's four-year-old preschool program. This would also put the burden of the cost on the parents' shoulders, many of which would be unable to afford the tuition, which would widen our achievement gap. Our VPK students are assessed each year using a TS Gold assessment. For the winter of 2020, in the area of identifies and names letters, our four-year-olds were scored at 93.4%. So this would be in the month of January. In the area of connect numeral with their quantities, our four-year-olds rated at 83.66% for our four-year-olds. It is just very important for the continued success of our students, our scholars, that the VPK funding remains strong and fully intact at its current funding level. So I thank you for allowing me to testify today, and you're welcome to ask any questions if you have any.
Thank you so much, Dr. Heil. And Chair Bedarni, I think that that's the only testifier that you have. Inclined to go to some questions. I know that we will have an amendment coming for discussion, but I want to see first if there are questions for the bill's author or for Dr. Heil members. And as I'm waiting to see that, I just want to make sure that we're all real clear about what's going on here, that there are nearly 4,000 there are nearly 8,000 pre-kindergarten slots, opportunities for students around the state, of which half have been receiving ongoing funding. But the other half, every 2 years, we keep on encountering this situation where they would then be expiring, and districts such as Dr. Heil's district then will find that then we lose that opportunity to have children receive this preschool education. And so what the bill proposes to do is to make sure that we can have that funding continue and have that opportunity continue. Again, looking to see if there are questions from members. And I am not seeing any, so I'm inclined to go to the amendment. I believe that that Chair Davney was offering this for discussion. Chair Davney, is that correct?
That is, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the HF 871A1 amendment to be before the committee.
Thank you, Chair Davney, and then please describe the amendment if you can.
Certainly, and first let me thank Representative Bernardi, Chair Bernardi, for bringing this issue forward this morning. You hit it, she hit it. These are 4,000 opportunities for our youngest students that we shouldn't let expire. But Mr. Chair, as you know, and I know, and I think all of us know, what drives many constituents of ours just a little crazy is when government has multiple programs targeted at the same outcome. Why do you have one and two? Why not just have one that deals with the problem? And so the A1 amendment does exactly that. Because currently, as you just described, Mr. Chair, Minnesota has redundant school readiness plus programs along with the previously existing and continuing voluntary pre-kindergarten program. The 871A1 amendment simplifies early childhood opportunities in Minnesota by merging the school readiness program into the voluntary kindergarten program. This reflects what actually goes on in most Minnesota school districts, where school readiness plus funding is used for voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. And in fact, members, you just heard Superintendent Kyle say, that's exactly what Fridley Public Schools does. They braid their funding to provide a voluntary pre-kindergarten program. The school districts are essentially, to quote Ronald Reagan, they're voting with their feet. They're using school readiness plus dollars to implement voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. We can take their leadership and simply merge these programs, simplify government a little bit for everyone. The amendment retains the strengths of both the school readiness program by continuing that program's licensed teacher requirement, assuring parents of staff well-prepared to guide their children. And it also maintains the requirement that VPK programs maintain alignment with kindergarten instruction, setting our younger scholars up for the best outcomes from pre-K and into kindergarten. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair Davney. And I might, and of course, members, feel free to raise hands and ask questions. I might, and Chair Bernardi, I'll want to comment from you, but I might ask Ms. Mock with House Research to just give us just a little more information about, as Chair Davney said, I think most districts that are receiving School Readiness Plus funding are in fact using that funding for voluntary pre-K slots. These are very similar programs. And if you could just, Ms. Mock, give us a little more on that, if you have that information available, kind of the proportion being used in different ways.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto. Yes, most schools are currently using their School Readiness Plus dollars for VPK programs rather than enhanced school readiness programs. I do not actually have the numbers in front of me, but I can quickly calculate those and get back to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Maki. I'll ask you to do that. As I recall, it's the great majority are using PPK versus Glorious Plus Pet. But yeah, if you could sort of work on that, and I'll get back to you, that would be great. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for Chair Dabney. Just wondering what the rationale is for, I understand trying to streamline and have a single program. It's much less confusing. I can see that. But Chair Dabney, what is the rationale for choosing to move it all to VPK versus the school readiness program? Seems to me the school readiness plus targets those at-risk kids a little better and is maybe a more efficient use of what we know is our limited funds that we have as government leaders to work with. So what's the rationale for moving it into the VPK and having it all that versus saying, let's move it all to School Readiness Plus, which targets those at-risk youth more and perhaps would allow more of those youth to be involved because the money is used more efficiently?
Sure, Debbie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, I'm following the lead of the practitioners in the field. I'm listening to superintendents like Superintendent Heil, who says, we're using School Readiness Plus dollars to implement a voluntary pre-kindergarten program. So the folks who are doing the work are doing what my amendment proposes.
Representative Bennett. Thanks, Mr. Chair. So perhaps I could ask the superintendent the question as to why the VPK program is more preferential to School Readiness Plus. Understanding that right now we have two and that makes it confusing. So which would be a more efficient use of funding? Which would be, in her mind, more beneficial for our students?
Yeah, Dr. Heil.
Thank you, Representative Pendle. Thank you, Representative Bennett. I want to start out by saying no matter what we do, the school districts are always will braid funding. We're always going to do the most that we can to be able to bring as many children in as possible. So it's already being done. So it is slightly redundant to have both. I can't speak for all districts, but when we're looking at BBK, as I had mentioned earlier, we continuously have a wait list for that. I believe, and you may be able to help me better with this, Representative Dabney, that back when we had a choice of VP, you had to choose between VPK or School Readiness Plus package. I know Fridley chose the VPK. So I just think it's more beneficial for the VPK because we will braid the funds no matter what. There's not a necessity to have two. With the understanding that we know these programs from the information that we are getting from legislation passed down, that we are to try to reach out to those families their needs in needs. That's our number one thing. So I do believe we can address it with just one of the options.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Superintendent. So I get that. What I don't understand, I guess, I can see how, I mean, every parent, if they're going to have the choice, would want free preschool school. That would be something that I think most people would desire. But when we look at the amount of funds that we have to use and targeting the most at-risk kids, which is our purpose here to get those kids ready for kindergarten, it would just seem to me a more efficient use of those funds targeting those kids. And from my understanding, I'm getting all these terms confused, but the School Readiness Plus has a sliding fee scale. Therefore, the families that really, really need it are going to still get the free VPK or the free pre-K. So I'll just throw that out. I just feel like it's a more efficient use of funding. I understand families would like to have preschool for every child, but when we're looking at limited funding, we really want to target those kids who absolutely need it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly, I don't know if Chair Dabney will have a comment on what you said. I do want to make sure I received information from Ms. Mock that of the districts that receive School Readiness Plus funding, just under 10% choose to use it for School Readiness Plus programs as compared to voluntary pre-K programs. And I guess I should note that the VPK program itself does have targeting towards It's required to be used at schools and districts that have a disproportionate concern. I want to make sure that I'm saying this right, but Dr. Heil, I saw you nodding, so maybe you would like to comment on what I'm saying about the ways in which voluntary pre-K programming is directed to more vulnerable children. Dr. Heil, is there something you want to add on it? Please, yeah.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. At the time when VPK started, I was assistant superintendent in Osceola Area School District, and all of the districts that received funding was due to the ones that had the need. So you had to prove the need. That's why Fridley had it. That's why in Osceola, there were specific schools that were able to have that need. So yes, you are correct, Chair Pinto, in that we allotted to those families first. And as a matter of fact, I know I'm speaking for Fridley, but in Osceola, we actually waited until September 1st to make sure parents who were moving in, because you had parents that moved into apartments, it's the same here, September 1st. And then we would open it up to the rest of the district 1 week afterwards. So the main, my understanding of the main point of when we started VPK was to serve those actual needs that you're speaking to, Representative Bennett.
Other questions, or and Chair Dabney, certainly if you want to respond to this at this point, I'll let you also give you the final word on your amendment. Not seeing other hands raised. I guess I want to note for members that it's my expectation. So we won't be voting on this today, and the underlying bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our committee budget. But it's certainly my intention to explore this, and would expect that that our committee budget bill would contain some version of this. So certainly would want to have folks either provide input now, and then certainly we'll have a conversation over the next couple of weeks. I'm not seeing other hands raised. Representative France and Lee France, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members say, Mr. Chair, is it possible to get information just on the whole VPK and the School Readiness Plus programs on the effect that it has had on the open slots of childcare or the missing slots? I think, what is it, 20 some thousand spots are unable to be filled here, or we've lost those spots over the number of years. Is there some research that can be done to see has VPK and School Readiness Plus has it truly had an adverse effect or not?
And I'm not aware, I'd be able to see if Ms. Mock is aware of anything, or if anybody else is. I'm not aware of specific research of that type, Representative Franson, and certainly we can ask specifically now, but then also anybody watching this, or any information anybody has on that issue. I know that concern's been expressed. Ms. Mock, anything that you can share on that?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have any information on that, but I can certainly look.
Okay, yeah, if you could please look, and then certainly we'll invite anybody who has information to share with us, Representative Franson, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I think we really need to have facts on this issue. I'm hearing reports from childcare providers that it has had an adverse effect. And the more kids that are being taken out of the childcare area into the public school setting, as we know, childcare providers do not make their income off of infants and toddlers. It's those preschool kids that keep the business going.
Yeah, and it is, thank you, Representative Franson, and of course it is it's really frustrating, right, that the economics, in fact, are such that you'd have one slightly older group of little kids and their families subsidizing even younger little kids and their families, but we know that the economics, we've certainly heard about that, and we know that's incredibly challenging. So, and this is a proposal to continue, Chair Bernardi, to continue programs that are in existence right now, not to expand them, but actually to simply to continue serving families in the same way that we are. Is that, Chair Bernardi, am I describing your proposal, the underlying proposal, correctly in that way?
Yes, that is accurate.
Okay. But thank you, Representative Franson. We'll certainly invite folks who have information on that to send it in, and we'll see what Ms. Mock and House Research are able to find for us. Chair Dabney, I'm not seeing any other hands raised on your amendment. So if you have sort of a final comment on that, anything you want to share before we move then to the underlying bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me again thank Chair Bernardi and Superintendent Heil for this opportunity this morning, and particularly Superintendent Heil for her insights. Essentially, we've had an experiment the last few years, School Readiness Plus VPK. I think when 90% of the school districts are choosing to use funds for VPK programs, I think we can call the experiment done. And it's time for us to recognize that in the legislature and combine the programs, keep the best of both, which I think we have the opportunity to do here through my amendment, and simplify government a little bit to the benefit, hopefully, of four-year-olds. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your time today and the committees.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. My understanding is that at this time you're withdrawing the amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, but I want to make sure folks don't misunderstand that as any kind of sign that's not something that I, at least, and I think others are interested in pursuing, but I want to make sure we at least had a conversation now in advance of a possible budget bill. And so I would invite comment and input from folks regarding the proposal in Chair Dabney's amendment. So then to the underlying bill, anything further on that? I'm not seeing any hands raised. So Chair Bernardi will give you the final comment on your own bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members. I really appreciate being here today, and I'm so glad that we got to share the news about Fridley Schools being a fully integrated international baccalaureate school, and a lot to be proud of, and a lot of work went into that by not only teachers and administration, but also the students. My daughter was a part of the first IB program at Fridley, and it is very challenging. So to start early for these young learners is so important. And I just wanted to call out to Representative Damath that she also is impacted by this. And so many of us across the state, our constituents are impacted by this. And I really appreciate your willingness to hear this. And I'm hoping for it being included in the bill. It's critical for the success of our students and state. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Bernardi. Thank you, Dr. Heil, for your important work and for your input. And with that, House File 871 is laid over for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill. Thank you so much. And members, Representative Bolden is still in the other committee, and so we're going to bump up the third bill on the agenda up. And that is my bill, so I'm going to turn things over to our Vice Chair, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And let's see. Sorry.
I'm finding my way. No, I have a motion, Madam Chair.
All right, hear your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House File 1942 for re-referral to the Judiciary Committee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe, so we have House File 1942 before us, and would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you. So House File 1942 is a bill that relates to a college savings account program that actually passed through this committee last term and ended up being funded by the legislature and supported, but then supported in all kinds of other ways as well. A program that draws on a lot of research from around the country regarding the importance of when you have a brand new baby, giving the opportunity to the family to say that there is a small amount of money set aside for saving for college and beyond. And in the course of that, there was a concern identified to make sure that every possible family who would want to take advantage of this and could be able to take advantage of this would be able to take advantage of it. I'm going to turn things over to the testifiers to describe more about the proposal, but I think it can really make a lot of sense to make sure that families are taking the full benefit of this program that was established. So with that, Madam Chair, if I can turn things to the first testifier, Mr. Karcher-Ramos.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Karcher-Ramos. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Mir Karcher-Ramos, the Director of the Office of Financial Empowerment, City of St. Paul. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1942. One thing I'll mention is we do have a handout if members want to take a look at that as well. So just over a year ago, on January 1st, 2020, the City of St. Paul launched College Bound St. Paul, a citywide children's savings account program starting at birth. On the handout provided, you'll see the tremendous a body of research that has been conducted on small dollar savings accounts. For example, research showed that low to moderate income children who have between $1 to $499 in a college savings account are three times more likely to go to college and four times more likely to graduate. There's a number of other pieces of research there, and the research is undeniable, and the reason why the City of St. Paul could not pass up the opportunity to launch a college savings account program in our city. With that said, what we know is that children's savings account programs across the country use public birth record information to auto-enroll children into programs. In our first year, the city enrolled just over 3,000 children born in 2020, but we could have enrolled up to around 4,700 children if we didn't run into issues with public birth record information. The state of Minnesota passed a policy in 1913 that made birth records confidential for children born to mothers who were not married. In other words, the city could not open a children's savings account for those 1,600 children in our first year because of this confidential birth record provision. So what this bill is asking the state legislature to do is to create an exemption for children's savings account programs to have access to certain birth record information. In existing statute, there's a number of exemptions, including family and children collaboratives providing services to young children. The city is asking for a comparable exemption for children savings account programs. Having this information will allow the City of St. Paul to fully enroll children in the program. If you look at the graph on our handout, policy would increase access to college savings accounts by about 16,000 participants over this year, or about 1,600 babies a year. In other words, passing this bill will ensure an additional 16,000 children over the next decade could have investment in a small dollar account, significantly increases their likelihood to attend and graduate college and have many other positive effects on them and their families. With that said, I'll conclude with my testimony, and I'm also here with a College Bound St. Paul parent.
Thank you. And Chair Pinto, you have a second testifier?
I do, Madam Chair. As referenced, this is a parent who wants the opportunity to share her experience.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Yang. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Bao Yang, and thank you so much for the opportunity to share my experience and support for why the automatic enrollment for all babies that are eligible for the College Bound St. Paul program to pass. So I come from a low-income single parent household, and I'm also the first to go out of college. My mother didn't have the resources, sorry if I get emotional, to provide financial support when I went off to college. Therefore, I know firsthand how important it is to start saving for her child's education early. So I know my mother three and my youngest child, Charlie, is on the College Bound program. And when I first heard about the program, it was from the Women, Infants, and Children's Nutritional Supplemental Program, also known as WIC. And every mother wants what's best for their child. So when I first heard about the program, I was super excited and wanted to enroll my child right away. However, it took me many months after I learned about the program to actually enroll my baby. So even though College Bound tries their best to enroll to make the enrollment process as easy as possible, there are still a lot of barriers for families to overcome. For example, it took me a long time to enroll because taking care of a newborn baby is a lot of work. So I didn't have the time to make that phone call or go online to enroll. I had the College Bound flyer taped to the wall of my bedroom. And every time I saw it, I always tell myself, I have to do this, I have to do this. But there's also at least three other things I had to do first, such as change that baby's diaper or wash the bottle. And then something will always come up every time after I do finish those three things. So it keeps on putting on the back burner and day after day, and then get to it. And so the first part is always the hardest, which is enrolling. And once you're enrolled, you can rest assured that when you do have the funds, you can just add it to the College Bound program, because then you have to worry about going to the bank to open up an account or having the extra funds to actually start that account. And the families who need College Bound most are the most likely to miss out on the opportunity because they don't have access to the resources to find out about the College Bound program, since they weren't automatically enrolled, or when they do find out they don't have the resources or support for the extra time to actually enroll, like what I experienced. So after time and time, eventually you can forget about it because it's so busy being the mother and time goes by so fast. And I'm sure there's also a list of other barriers that other families and parents are going through that I'm not mentioning, but being a part of College Bound has given me so much relief knowing that I'm helping my child to have a better future. They don't have to deal with the guilt and hardship that I had to when I decided to go to college. Having the chance to automatically enroll to the College Bound program means that every child is equal, have the equal opportunity to start saving for the child's future and empower them to follow their passions and dreams to make a better future for themselves. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, for coming to our committee to testify and share your story, which all of us, I think, can identify on some level of what it means to be a new parent with a new baby, but to have such hope for their future. And so thank you very much for coming before us to testify. So to your bill, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just to clarify a few things for members and members of the public too. Mr. Carter-Ramos had referenced a handout that is on the committee website, as I had said at the very beginning of our hearing today. And so it's just a one pager that kind of summarizes and explains this a little bit more. And just to clarify the importance, and I agree, Ms. Yang, that was such powerful testimony and I really appreciate it. As she explained, I mean, the automatic enrollment is such an important component of this. Families can, of course, opt out. You know, you don't need to do this. But to have it be when you've got a brand new baby and there's a lot going on, to know that this has just been established and is happening, you can turn it down if you want. But to have it be that based on a particular family status that some people get automatically enrolled, others don't, doesn't seem like a fair or appropriate way of doing things. This is a small change to make that work. I think with that, we're probably ready for any questions that that members may have.
Yes, questions from members. And I am not seeing any at this point. Okay. Final remarks, Chair Pinto.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I think this is really a small change to have an existing program work as effectively as possible for families and especially for low-income families. And so really would appreciate your help. This is going to go on to the Judiciary Committee that'll review from that perspective. But as far as making sure that that we get new babies and new families off to a great start, this is a small step that can really make a big difference for them. So I really appreciate members' support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 1924 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. The clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden. Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Damon.
No.
Representative Juergens.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watun. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasluwick.
Aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Cotiza Watun.
Aye.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We have 8 yeses and 4 noes.
There being 8 ayes and 4 nays, The motion prevails, and House File 1942 is referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. With that, I will hand the gavel back to Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Pryor, and thank you, members, for that. And so I believe Representative Bolden's bill is still now being voted on. And what I'm inclined to do is to start on our final bill. But as soon as Representative Bolden comes, we'll take a pause on that and move to her bill. And our final bill is from Representative Pryor. Wait a second, Representative Bolden, I think maybe here after all. Representative Bolden, are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. I hope things went well for you in the other committee. You're back home in early childhood. We're glad to have you. And so, Representative Bolden, we are ready for your bill, House File 1747. Would you like to move to place that bill before our committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Excellent. So, Representative Bolden, if you could please describe your bill, which I'll note, members, it's a really exciting step forward for us in recognizing the need for early care and learning in our state and taking steps to address it. So Representative Bolden, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1747 is a bill that will greatly enhance the child care assistance program. Since 2003, Minnesota's reimbursement rates to providers who accept the child care assistance program have been among the lowest in the nation. This bill will raise the reimbursement rate to 75% of market rate to finally ensure that providers serving children on CCAP are paid a rate that covers their costs and helps them pay their staff decent wages. And I would note that 75% is the rate recommended by the federal HHS department. This bill will also eliminate the wait list for families on the CCAP basic sliding fee program statewide. While it will certainly be late for 3 and 4 year old children in those families to receive help, we can make a huge difference in the lives of Minnesota families by ending the wait list this session. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to testifiers.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Bolden. And so we'll have your first testifier, I believe, is Chris Gable. And if you can please identify yourself for the record and then please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Gable. I'm the Child Care District Supervisor for the YMCA of the North. I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Alliance of YMCAs. The YMCA runs 20 child care centers across the state, and I directly supervise 7 of them. Our centers hold 4-star Parent and Aware ratings, and we strive to provide the highest quality care and education to all children, no matter what their economic circumstances of their families. Over time, however, this has become more difficult. More families come to us needing child care assistance, but reimbursement rates continue to fall even farther behind what's necessary to sustain our programs. I'd like to share experiences at 2 of our centers in Rochester and Lakeville. Our Rochester center just celebrated its 2nd anniversary, and it's been very difficult. I think when people hear Rochester, they automatically think everyone has Mayo Clinic money coming out of their ears. Not worried about physicians being able to afford child care, but there are countless other staff necessary for something like the Mayo Clinic to work. Parents come to us seeking quality child care so that they can report to essential support jobs in maintenance, nutrition services, and other hospital support. Even those lucky enough to receive child care assistance see the gap between what their reimbursement rate pays and our actual tuition and know they can't make up the difference. Time and again, parents say they feel like they have no option but to stay home. While we talk about a child care crisis, in reality, our child care center has classrooms ready and waiting to serve children, and did even before the pandemic. The issue is not that there are not enough children to fill the classrooms, it's that parents who need the care can't afford to access it. Communities are changing and we need to change with them. Lakeville was one of the fastest growing cities in Minnesota for much of the last decade. When the YMCA decided to open a child care center there, the business plan called for 80% of parents to pay private tuition and 20% to use CCAP. By the time our doors opened and we started enrolling, we were shocked to see the business plan play out in reverse. 20% of the parents seeking care could pay privately, while 80% of our demand came from parents using CCAP. Knowing what you know about how low Minnesota reimbursement rates are, imagine what that did to our financial outlook. Low CCAP rates have real effects on real people and not just the parents. My staff hasn't had a raise in well over a year. We routinely lose experienced teachers to other jobs that can afford to offer a slightly higher wage or a small signing bonus. When you make little to begin with, small adjustments mean a lot. We desperately want to pay more. Our teachers have earned it, and we need to hold on to them. We need to adjust our pay scales, raise hiring wages, have regular wage adjustments, but CCAP rates are holding us back. Families need childcare. The demand is high across the state, but they aren't able to access it. The answer is not to make childcare cheaper, it's to invest more in it, and by doing so, our community is an economy. We can't get unstuck from the system where parents, even with state assistance, can't access childcare and work on their own economic stability, and providers can't be paid at the rate that keeps them in the field. We will all continue to feel handcuffed. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for your work for kids. And I'm just looking to see, I've got the next testifier, Liz Harris, if you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Sorry. Yep. Thank you, Chair Pinto. And Chair Pinto and members, my name is Liz Harris. I'm a family child care provider in Cottage Grove, a former member of the Minnesota State Family Child Care Task Force, and a member of Main Street Alliance. The child care system in Minnesota is broken. The cost of providing child care as well as rates charged to parents have soared in the past two decades, but the CCAP rates have not kept pace. I have not participated in the CCAP as my business would have lost money. As a former treasury analyst of 7 years at a Fortune 100 company, I'm good with money and budgets. Participating in CCAP simply did not make business sense for my family and business. This is why I never participated. But raising the reimbursement rate to the 75th percentile would be a game changer. I could make those numbers work for my business. I know I'm not alone. By raising the CCAP reimbursement rate and eliminating the waiting list, it would entice more providers like me to participate in the program, expanding choices for parents who use it. It may also attract new providers into the field, as they could also make the numbers work and bring a level of financial security to family child care providers serving lower income families. It would help address racial and economic disparities by giving parents more options of care for their children. It would bring relief to the families who are in need of child care. This is the largest form of support that Minnesota currently provides to both families and providers. As the pandemic has highlighted, our economy cannot run without childcare, and there are insufficient business supports for childcare providers. The field needs more investment from the state, and increasing CCAP reimbursement rates and eliminating the waiting lists are key pieces of what is needed to address the childcare crisis. Please support families and family childcare providers by voting for House File 1747. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work. Next, turning to Shannon Burns, if you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Shannon Burns. I'm the owner of a small business consulting firm in Alexandria called Due Nord, and I'm a member of the Main Street Alliance of Minnesota. The lack of a good, affordable child care system is crushing families, workers, and small businesses. I know this firsthand as a mother who's had to juggle to afford childcare for my own child while running a small business. Care is essential, but it is grossly unaffordable. Even for those Minnesota families who can make the payments, I've seen countless clients and peers forced out of the workplace just to make ends meet. Many small business owners choose self-employment in hopes of a more flexible and forgivable schedule while caring for their young children. Meanwhile, the ability to work more uninterrupted hours or be able to afford enriching childcare opportunities for their children is unattainable. As the pandemic has put in stark contrast, access to affordable childcare supports employees and employers. When parents try to juggle childcare responsibilities and work, both suffer. Access to affordable, reliable childcare allows employees to show up and be productive and help small businesses find and retain employees. An investment in the childcare infrastructure is an investment in small business. Small businesses like mine support significant increases in the childcare assistance program and eliminating waitlists for the program. These steps will allow more Minnesotans, particularly women, to participate in the workforce and to spend their earnings in local businesses. Increasing the reimbursement rate for childcare providers will lead to an uptake in accepting CCAP and expand options for families, both of which are sorely needed, particularly in greater Minnesota. It will also allow childcare providers to invest more in their businesses and their employees, which again adds dollars to the local economy, helping small businesses and greater Minnesota. This bill is a win for children, a win for small businesses, a win for greater Minnesota. Please support House File 1747.
Thank you so much, Ms. Burns. We appreciate it. And looking finally to Milagro Rosario, if you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed. Let's see if we have you on. Yep. Yep.
Okay. Well, hi, I'm Milagro, and I'm the center manager at Rainbow Child Development Center out here in St. Paul. I have been working in childcare for 8 years. I am a grandmother of six children who are in childcare as we speak, and they're on assistance. So having childcare is a need. For my kids to provide for their families, the need of childcare. They need childcare. Childcare provides the safety net for resources for the kids to have food. It is crucial space for children to learn and grow. I know that there are many families out there who are on the wait list for assistance for years when they need the care now. That's why we need to eliminate the wait list so that everyone who needs care qualifies, and raising the reimbursement rate would allow more providers to provide care for families on assistance, which would allow more and more families to have access to childcare.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing those comments. I think Representative Bolden, that's it in terms of testifiers from you. Yep, I see you nodding. And so we'll move to member questions and comments. Just as we do, Representative Juergens, I've got you up. I just want to make sure to note for everyone that on our committee website are again a number of materials, including I know a letter signed by a pretty impressive and broad group of organizations that is supporting this proposal and supporting increased investment in the CCAP program and others as well. I just want to direct the members' attention to that. But Representative Juergens, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if I missed it. I'm looking in the bill language. I don't see an appropriation amount and I don't see a fiscal analysis. Was that covered in the testimony? Did I miss it? What's the cost of this, or would be the cost to the program with this change?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Juergens. And I know, and I'll call in Mr. Berger in a second. I want to make sure to note just that, given the way things are right now, I know there's quite a backup in terms of fiscal note request to DHS, and I think that this is still awaiting that. But Mr. Berg, if you could please comment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens, that's exactly correct what the chair mentioned. There is a pending fiscal note request on this. It has not been completed yet. The DHS is extremely backed up with fiscal note requests. And as soon as we have it, I'll provide it to the committee staff to distribute.
Representative Juergens. Yeah, please.
Could you remind us what's the path for this bill today?
And Representative Juergens, so this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill. It won't need to go any place else. We have jurisdiction over the accounts covered here. And so by the time we will do our committee's budget bill, we should then by that point have a sense. I think you know, we can recognize that it'll be a substantial investment, recognizing that right now we're at the 25th percentile. And this would get us to the federal standard being the 75th percentile. But as far as, so we'll be simply laying it over today. And so we'll have a sense of it before we would include it in some form of it in the budget bill. Representative Juergens.
No, that's it. No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, good. Thank you. So we'll go to Representative Pryor. I've got Lee Franson as well. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Bolden, for bringing this proposal forward, because I think we're kind of pulling everything together that we did at the beginning of this this committee's work, and actually last biennium too, when we pulled together data about the importance of nurturing in early childhood, the importance of parents working and having a place where their children can be taken care of and is safe and reliable and in a nurturing setting. But then also how important the people's, you know, their work is, and being able to be a participant in the workforce is to our economy. And that, you know, we've said this before in this committee, child care is an part of our infrastructure in Minnesota. It's necessary, it's essential to have a workforce that can participate in the economy. And it's essential to have children that are prepared for school and for careers as they grow up. So the decisions that we're making now is going to have impacts for decades and decades to come. I do want to focus in again on kind of where we, the other bill that we heard this morning about, you know, what the economics of a childcare business. I mean, and this was Representative Leeds Franson's question about, you know, you start making money on four-year-olds, and, you know, now we're talking about it as a business. And so to go back to our testifier, Ms. Harris, about the business of childcare and how an infant versus a two-year-old and a three-year-old and then a four-year-old, how that impacts your business and how your rates have to change based on the age of the child, and how, if you're going to have a business, what's the, you know, what's how that all comes together as a business owner. And just to go back again about the importance of actually paying for what the need is and how that comes together. So Ms. Harris could address that again.
Oh, sir, thank you. So Ms. Harris, please.
So I have actually never taken CCAP money, like I mentioned. And yes, the rates have to change. I change my rates from when they're an infant and as they get older. It's very expensive as an infant due to liability, due to the amount of work. And infant spots right now are very difficult to find. And what that can also cause is an unsafe environment for kids as parents are desperate, which will, parents will start to go to unlicensed childcare and they'll look for other options. When right now, there's not enough funding into childcare. And I think we're all seeing that, and we can all, Democrats, Republicans, everyone can agree. And if we don't invest money and get people to the field, this crisis is going to get worse. And so that's why I hope that money starts to get pumped into this industry. Otherwise, who's going to take care of the kids?
Representative Fryer, follow up on that? Nope, you're all set. Okay. Lee Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When the word substantial was mentioned, substantial investment, I'm assuming, Representative Pinto, that you have a ballpark figure in your head, what you're looking for. And would that be, are you thinking state funds or the federal infusion?
And thank you, Representative Franson. I don't have a real good sense. And I know if we're going from the 25th percentile to the 75th, that'll be, I guess we're going to get the number right soon enough. But my thinking is that we recognize that this is an industry, and we've really heard this in a sector. We've heard this over the past couple months, where the economics just don't work, right? Where parents are paying a huge amount and providers are getting paid so little. We've heard, you know, these incredible statistics about, you know, a quarter of providers struggling with food insecurity for their own families, and you know, a third being on public assistance, et cetera. And so certainly, you know, our committee, of course, is working with state dollars. And so I would expect that it's going to require state funding, certainly as one of the resources. But as far as sort of a sense of things, I guess I figure we're going to know soon enough, and before we'll have to make final decisions as a committee, we'll have those numbers in place. But Representative Franson.
And then another question. So would you anticipate, with an increase of childcare assistance into that program, do you anticipate that leading into higher wages for those providers that accept CCAP? And then what does it do to the providers that don't accept childcare assistance?
Thank you, Representative Franson. Well, I guess we just heard from Ms. Harris. I do think that it will cause a greater number of providers to be able to accept children where you've got, where CCAP is being paid. This will put them, and I can see Ms. Harris nodding. So really, it really helps the economics of the sector more generally in that way. You know, again, right now we have a situation where the federal standard is, and this would make a lot of sense, 75th percentile. And I want to, I know Lee Franson, you and I understand this for folks of the public who may be watching, to recognize when we say these numbers of 75th percent, what it's saying is that there's a survey that's done every couple years of providers to say, what are your rates? And then you go up a certain number of spots in that survey and set the CCAP support level at that. And I know you know that, but I just wanna make sure members of the public that they're aware of what we're talking about. Right now, that level is down at the 25th percentile. So 75% of providers are charging higher rates and the higher cost. We wanna make sure that we're meeting the actual cost of care. So that's where 75th percentile does it. And my thinking is that that increasing the making sure that providers are actually being reimbursed at, you know, the market rate of 75th percent is something where it should, yes, to back to your original question, be able to have providers be more fairly compensated, have them in a better position, and have all providers be in better position to say if a family comes to them that they can then take that family, even if it's a low-income family receiving CCAP, still take them and have them be part of their customer base as to keeping their business strong. So, yeah, I think it will help the whole sector, and I think that there's a lot of evidence to support that too. Representative Franson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I can empathize with that as well as a former child care provider who did take many families on the child care assistance program where some could pay the difference and some just weren't in that position where they were able to pay, the additional amount on top of their co-pays. So. It's always a fascinating discussion that we have every year. Some years we make movements, some years we don't, but hopefully we don't go backwards.
Thank you so much, Representative Franson. And I'll maybe just note per your comment that although we, you know, some years we make movements, some years we don't, and we know the way brain development works, you know, every, especially we remember we learned in our committee that, you know, every second there's 700 synapses being formed in new babies. So we know that, I guess I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to make some progress this year, and we'll see how things go. I'll let, we've got Representative Morrison coming up next, so we'll call on you, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bolden, for bringing this important bill forward. You've sort of answered my question, I think, in your exchange with Representative Franzen, but, and I apologize if this is redundant, but I'm curious how long Minnesota has lagged from the federal standard in CCAP, and then how that might have played a role in the child care crisis that we're facing in our state.
Dude, I've got a bit of information, but I should first look to see if either Representative Bolden has a sense or if we have anybody else on the line who has that. I know that we have Ms. Pocine from DHS who may be able to provide information on that, I believe is on the line with us. Ms. Pocine, are you? Yeah, we'll look to you if you can please help to answer Representative Morrison's question.
Good morning. Excuse me. This is Lori Pocine, manager of the Child Care Assistance Program. And Minnesota has not been at the 75th percentile since 2004.
And
2002, I'm sorry, 2002.
So sort of the early 20 years, those cuts in the early 2000s, Ms. Pocine, is that correct?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
I was just asking that this is part of a broader set of budget cuts in the early 2000s, as I recall.
Yes, in 2003 is the year it was frozen, and then it from that point on, it never regained the level of 75th percentile.
And Representative Morrison.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Pocine. So it seems that we've sort of dug ourselves a hole for a while. And I imagine, I don't know if any of the testifiers or if Representative Bolden could comment on what role this chronic underfunding may have played in helping us find ourselves in the situation that we're in today.
Comments from any of the testifiers? Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing that forward. I think you're exactly right. I think what we are seeing now, the crisis we are seeing in child care, as we have been hearing about, certainly for weeks on this committee, I think that's a direct impact of the underfunding of this program and of this sphere sort of for many years. And I would defer to any of the testifiers who would like to speak additionally on that.
Anybody, Ms. Harris.
Hi, yeah, yes, it's been severely underfunded. And
as we have looked at in the task force that I was on as to why providers were leaving the field, one of the reasons that providers were leaving the field was because the rates for CCAP were so low. And like I mentioned before, that causes so many issues. And a big issue that I see is that if there's no benefits as it is to running your own business as a child care provider, and there's really no, and there's no incentive either. And I am one that has not even been on the food program. I haven't taken CCAP. I've done this all just by families paying. I don't even like to charge families that much money because I know that that money can be used for other things, but I also have to make a living as well. So it's broken. The whole system is broken. And without funds being pumped into it, we can't have robots taking care of our kids. And so we have to do something.
And it looks like Ms. Rosario would like to follow up as well. So let's call on you.
Yes. Please. Hi. How can I say? I can say this more so like on my own personal experience as far as being a grandparent here and also like being an employee. And true enough, but we get paid. I mean, we are struggling. And there are times where you feel like, do you go to a different field, you know, find you a different job? But I stay because the last thing I want to do is you're giving up on a child. So by not having funding to provide for them, and then we just like you lose teachers. So how does that impact on a child? That impacts a whole lot. You know, so I can sit here and say, yes, I make ends meet, but I'm here for, you know what I'm saying, for our little friends, you know, so they can know that we are here.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Burns, looks like you want to dive in as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Morris. To respond to your question more directly, I have studied the generational implications of economic impacts on the workforce. And essentially we're looking at a 20-year gap based on the data that was just discussed. And so, you know, 20 years actually reflects an entire generation in terms of time. And so to ask about your impact, this gap has impacted an entire generation of children.
Representative Morrison, follow up from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's pretty stunning to think about 20 years of chronic underfunding and all of the lives that were impacted adversely by that. Heartbreaking, but also inspiring that we have to find the resources to do this for the sake of our kids and for the sake of the future of Minnesota. Thank you to all the testifiers for your insights.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. Representative Katisa Witun has her hand raised. Representative Katisa Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm having some audio issues this morning, so a lot of what I wanted to contribute has been mentioned already, but I did want to highlight what Ms. Rosario just said about being here for the kids. And, you know, we know that the turnover in the childcare industry is so high, and especially at an age when these children are really looking to build relationships and learn and make these brain connections, I think that making the in this industry such that someone can stay and build those relationships and be there for our little friends, as Mr. Rosario just said. I want to thank Representative Bolden for continuing to push forward on CCAP. And I think that eventually we will be able to get there. And I think that the time is now. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katisa Witun. We've been talking about the 75th percentile. I'm looking for other hands, but just going to make a comment and ask a question myself. We've been talking about the 75th percentile issue. And I've said, I think previously in this committee, that when I've attended national conferences with other legislators that have mentioned that our rates are set at the 25th percentile of a survey several years old, jaws drop and people are just amazed, because in many other states, They either are the federal standard or certainly much higher than we are. So that's one important component of this bill. But another important component is to forecast the program. And I don't know if Representative Bolden, if you're able to talk about that, or if we should look to Ms. Posehn to describe the impact of that, or somebody else. Representative Bolden, we'll start with you. I just want to make sure that we highlight that as well and make folks aware of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that opportunity because that is another very important piece of this, of that forecasting to eliminate the wait list. So currently in Minnesota, there are about 2,000, just a little over 2,000 families who are on that wait list. So families who qualify for this program, but are not able to take advantage of it because the funds aren't there. And so this bill would change that and ensure that all families who qualify have the ability to take advantage of that. And with that, I will maybe send it to Ms. Posehn to see if she has anything to add.
Yeah, and I know Ms. Posehn, you just would be sort of describing the impact of that. But if there's anything further that you can add, please.
Yes, again, Representative Pinto, Chair, and other members, we just concur that it would eliminate the waiting list. Upon the effective date, it would free up the funds so that the roughly 2,000 families on the waiting list would be served, plus incoming families who maybe knew about, never asked about child care assistance.
Just a follow-up for me on that. It seems like it would really simplify administration, because right now counties especially are spending a lot of time and energy and money figuring out various orders in which we heard a bill from Representative Pryor several weeks ago talking about reprioritizing the waiting list. This would eliminate the need for all that. It would just be, if a family qualifies and we've decided that, you know, a family at a given income level should receive this support, they would receive the support. We wouldn't have this whole rigmarole. Is that right, Ms. Posehn?
Correct, Chair Pinto and others. Years ago, I worked with Hennepin County doing that, and there was a short while where there was enough money, and I can tell you our jobs at that time were much simpler. We did not, we could just focus on getting their employment verifications and helping them find a provider, and that was what we did.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rosario, you've got something you want to add on this?
Yes. It's pertaining to like the wait list and the purpose of why CCAP even began. You know, it's a program that is out there to help families, you know, so they can provide and their child can have the proper care. So you got to try to just like imagine to, whereas here I am trying to go get some help so I can provide for my family, and I'm just being told, well, there's a 2-year wait list. So do I tell my child, I'm sorry, I can buy you some milk in 2 years when I get a job and you have care? So there's a big impact, you know? So that wait list needs to be eliminated, because how do you tell somebody, I want to provide for you, but you have to wait?
Thank you so much, Ms. Rosario. And again, and before I turn, it looks like no further hands. So before I turn things back to the bill's author, I'll just note again the document that's on our website labeled a MinLeg session flyer with the support of a number of organizations for increased investment in CCAP, as well as in scholarships. We'll hear that on a different day, but I want to make sure to call attention to that. So Representative Bolden, you get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would just really, really like to thank the testifiers for sharing their stories and their perspective and the really important work that they're doing. As indicated by testimony, investment in this program will reverberate and bolster the entire child care system. When the child care assistance program increases its rates, more providers will participate, workers will be better paid, and more families will be served. And eliminating the wait list would make an impact on those more than 2,000 families who are currently on the wait list. And just to note that that's 2,000 families, so that's more than 2,000 children. This is a critical step towards the long-term health of our childcare system that we cannot afford to ignore. And I too would just want to make sure that members see all the organizations in support of funding the vast need for childcare assistance listed in the letter included in the hearing attachments. This includes the YMCA, the Children's Defense Fund, the Minnesota Business Partnership, and many, many others. There is a broad coalition of support for CCAP funding across the state. And the last thing I will say, I was really struck by the comments around sort of the disinvestment in this area that has affected a generation of children. that just really is sort of heartbreaking. And we have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to change that and have that look differently moving forward. So members, with that, I would ask for your support and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. Thanks to all the testifiers. We really appreciate it. And with that, the chair lays over House File, make sure I get the correct number, 1747 for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill. Thank you again. And our last bill up today, members, is from Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 1876 and place that before the committee? Oh, we got to get you unmuted, Representative Pryor. Yeah.
Sorry.
There we go.
Yes.
No problem.
I would like to move House File 1876.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And members, we are hearing some bills this week that look at investment in early care and learning, which is so important. And we want to make sure that the system that's being invested in is working as well as possible. And so this final proposal today is connected with that. Representative Pryor, if you can please describe your proposal and move to your testifiers then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This proposal, which now has bipartisan support, focuses on an issue that is important for building an early care and education system that works for children, families, and taxpayers. Specifically, this proposal seeks to implement a process to continually improve the parent-aware quality rating and improvement system by updating the old parent-aware authorizing statute to remove obsolete language, require an independent evaluation of parent-aware, and require that a revision of the parent-aware standards and indicators followed to address evaluation results. This type of evaluation, known as a validation study, was a recommendation of both the Licensed Family Child Care Task Force and the Early Care and Education Crisis Work Group, which includes representatives from nonprofit advocacy groups, the business community, and child care providers. With nearly 100,000 Minnesota children attending parent-aware rated early care and education programs each year, it is imperative that we ensure that our rating system is fair, accurate, and meaningful, which is the goal of this evaluation and the improvements that would follow it. As a longtime education supporter, I'm excited to have an opportunity to work this session on growing early education investments, as well as building a strong system for ensuring these investments meet our goals to serve Minnesota children. Now I'd like to turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. I think the first one is Erica Moss. If you can please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erica Moss. I'm the executive director of Close Gaps by Five, a nonprofit organization with the mission of using quality early education to address Minnesota's nation-leading longstanding gaps of opportunity and achievement. We participate in the Early Care and Education Crisis Work Group that Representative Pryor mentioned at the outset, and are here today to offer our support for House File 1876, because as much as we support investment in early education, namely our organization works hard to expand investment in the Early Learning Scholarship Program, we also care very deeply about ensuring that those investments work. So on behalf of the work group, I wanna thank Representative Pryor for introducing this bill. If this language is enacted, it will mark the third large scale evaluation of parent aware. The first was conducted as part of the pilot in 2010, and the second was a requirement of the state's Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant in 2016. While these studies are not well known, they represent the deepest, most comprehensive efforts to understand the relationship between early care and education program quality and pre-kindergarten child outcomes in the state of Minnesota. The last study, and in the handouts, members, you'll see a summary of from the researchers of what that what the conclusions were of that study. That study included a sample of nearly 1,200 children who were assessed during the fall and spring of the year prior to kindergarten entry. So looking at growth over the year prior to kindergarten entry with a 9-tool battery, including measures of early literacy and early math, language, social competence, behavior, approaches to learning, executive function, health, and other basic school readiness concepts. So color, letter, shape identification, et cetera. The study also included 325 early care and education programs of all types. So this study looks across all of the types of programs that are rated in Parent Aware, including Head Start and public school-based programs, also licensed child care centers and family child care homes. The program there are measures also of program quality, independent measures. So looking at teacher-child interactions, quality of learning environment, et cetera. It is from the findings of that study, that last study, that we know that children in parent-aware rated programs are making key gains on school readiness measures, and that low-income children, very importantly for gap closure, low-income children are making the greatest gains across those measures. We also found positive evidence in that study, or the researchers found positive evidence that ratings identify meaningful quality differences related to children's development. After each of these studies is completed, this is the most important part. It's not just for the sake of doing the study. A review and revision process has then been undertaken by DHS to look at the parent aware standards and indicators. So these are the things that providers are measured against when they're seeking a voluntary parent aware rating. Look at those standards and indicators, as well as the process for conducting the ratings. So not just what's being measured, but how is it being measured? How accessible is it to providers? Is it as simple as it could possibly be, et cetera? And there's a commitment to use those evaluation results to improve. So again, not a study for a study's sake. We don't want that. We want to really learn and understand and improve. In the past, these processes have...
And Ms. Miles, I might ask if you can wrap up in the next minute or so, if you can, please.
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Chair. In this particular improvement cycle, we're really excited about the opportunity to incorporate some work that DHS is doing with funding support from Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation around cultural relevancy and competency, and also at better incorporating findings from licensed family childcare programs, who at the last time this study was conducted were not participating in parent aware at such high rates, and therefore the sample wasn't as large as we would have liked. So with that, thanks Representative Pryor and Mr. Chair for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Ms. Moss. We have one public member of the public who signed up, Ms. Cunningham. If you can identify yourself and provide your testimony, that would be great.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Cindy Cunningham. I have been a licensed family child care provider in St. Paul for approximately 24 years, and I'm the current public policy chairperson for the Minnesota Child Care Provider Information Network, MCPIN, which is a 501c3 statewide association for licensed family child care providers. I was also a part of the Family Child Care Task Force for the past 2 years and worked on the small group focused on parent aware, which was this duty 6 in the report. I'm testifying on behalf of MCPIN in support of House File 1876. Thank you for Representative Pryor for bringing this forward. The proposal of an updated evaluation validation study was high on the task force conclusions of needing to be accomplished. This bill is needed to pass to ensure that parent aware is accomplishing what it intends to accomplish and that there are not unintended consequences. The validation study from 2016 on the efficacy of parent aware has been the focus of investment in parent aware and the importance of its presence, as our QRS. During the 2016 validation study, licensed family child care was not fully represented due to the rollout process and low numbers of LFCCs attending at the time. Half of those eligible to participate in parent aware need to be included in this validation study for accurate understanding of the program. For parent aware to be substantiated moving forward, it is critical to have another snapshot of clarity into who is being served, how it is being implemented, and in particular, the efficacy of its presence as our QRS. Funding to move this evaluation forward is well invested, as it is critical to know that the stated expectation of making a difference in children's lives is happening. If it is not, then this study can bring light to those aspects that need improved. This will allow a target improvement rather than just a shot in the dark approach. Please support this measure to ensure that children and families are being served and that the providers can provide the support that children require to be successful. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. So members, time for questions. Questions or comments. While we're waiting that, I'll just note that it seems like this seems like a terrific opportunity to make sure that our quality rating and improvement system, or QRIS, which was referenced, that term was used. This is a chance to make sure that it's working just as well as possible. And so I am not seeing any hands raised on this one. To confirm, this would be included potentially in our committee's budget bill. I think that we're awaiting, maybe I'll just confirm this, Representative Pryor, that we are awaiting a fiscal note on this proposal, I believe is the case. Representative Pryor?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We are waiting. There will be a fiscal note, though, because obviously if we're going to do a validation study, there is a cost involved.
Understood. Okay, looking to see, not seeing any hands raised. So Representative Pryor, in that case, actually, I'm sorry, I didn't think of one question I was going to ask. Does Parent Aware include an alignment? Do we look at all, this is probably to Ms. Moss, do we look at all the alignment with the K-12 system? Is that something that is, I've been meaning to ask this at some point, Ms. Moss, sorry to put you on the spot in committee, but as long as we've got just a minute for this, I thought others may be interested as well, about examining the connection with K-12 schooling and kind of the handoff in that way. Is that something that is addressed in currently in Parent Aware?
Mr. Chair and members, thanks for the question. So the Parent Aware framework is built on the Early Childhood Indicators of Progress, or ESIPS, which is aligned to K-12 standards. And so in that way, there's full alignment. So for example, there are indicators in Parent Aware about use of a curriculum. Those curricula are evaluated against the Early Childhood Indicators of Progress and then are approved for use in Parent Aware. Same thing with formative assessment tools. Providers use assessment tools in their programs. Those assessment tools are aligned with the ESIPs, which are aligned with the K-12 standards. And then in terms of transition to kindergarten, I don't have the indicators in front of me, but yes, my understanding is that there are specific quality indicators related to how providers support children in their transition to kindergarten. Make that handoff, if you will, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Chair Dabney, you're right that I was kind of looking to you. Yeah, there we go. Chair Dabney, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for getting in ahead of me. I guess this has been a question for me, and you asked it very well. But do we have expectations that there will be a relationship between the provider and the kindergarten to sharpen that alignment so it's not just kind of hazy floating out there as Ms. Moss described, but you know, a little bit more focused, a little bit more intentional to support the 5-year-old in that transition?
Ms. Moss.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, yes, there is tremendous work underway at the Department of Education and also through the Children's Cabinet and the preschool development grant that the state has currently from the federal government to look at deepening practices around those relationships. I think also as the system progresses, for example, in the EPIC report, this emphasis switches from regarding early care and education and that happens in childcare also as education that happens in schools. You can really think about how childcare providers will be elevated as professionals and how more intentional connections will be made between school districts and the childcare sector, I think, in really important ways. And then again, back to the evaluation, I think that'll be an opportunity to take what's learned from the preschool development grant work or other work that MDE is doing around transitions to kindergarten and to bake that into the ratings framework that will then be infused throughout the system.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Moss. My understanding is the research says the better the alignment, the better the outcome. And it seems like that's not a place that Minnesota has put emphasis up until now. So I'm happy to see the discussion starting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Dabney. And I guess I'll note that in so many ways, our emphasis in early childhood has been pretty, as we've said a number of times in this committee, has been pretty fragmented in so many respects, right? And maybe it is true, including this one as well, hopefully coming together. I want to note for members that the Early Childhood Indicators of Progress, the ESIPs, are kind of housed in the Department of Education, Parent Aware housed in the Department of Human Services. Another example of sort of some different pieces in different places we're trying to get as much connection as we can. Representative Pryor, we're going to give you the final word as we wrap up here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was having this similar thought that that this is another demonstration of how fragmented our system is. And as a committee, I think we're doing our best to pull it all together and to make it cohesive and show how the parts can work together. But it's a big task. And we're not a full-time legislature. So that's a problem. But the other thing I want to mention is, and you know, I think that this this quality rating also, what's important about this is to say that what's going on from the very youngest learners and children in the care, we're talking about a profession that has a profound impact on a child's development. And so it's not just babysitting. As we say, this is about care and learning. And this is a system to keep promoting the quality of what's going on in our child care system right now. So appreciate the support from this committee. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for the presentation today, allowing me to
thank present. You. Thank you, Representative Pryor. With that, I'm laying House File 1876 over for possible inclusion in committee budget bill. And I'll note today, members, we've had a really rich conversation about a lot of topics, many of which have been essentially deferred for later for various reasons. We're laying things over. Really encourage committee members, but especially members of the public, to please be in touch with us as we're pulling things together. We're going to have another hearing on this Thursday, 2 days from now, similarly. But I really appreciate the rich conversation. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.